Did you get that stuff about her kid when you dipped into her aura? Ralph asked as they crossed the leaf-strewn parking lot. Lois nodded. Beyond the lot, the entire east side of Derry was shimmering with bright kaleidoscopic light. It was coming back hard now, very hard. That secret light cycling up and up. Ralph reached out and put his hand on the side of his car. Touching it was like tasting a slick, licorice-flavored cough drop. I don't think I took very much of her stuff, Lois said. But it was as if I swallowed all of her. Ralph remembered something he'd read in a science magazine not long ago. If every cell in our bodies contains a complete blueprint of how we're made, he said, why shouldn't every bit of a person's aura contain a complete blueprint of what we are? That doesn't sound very scientific, Ralph. I suppose not. She squeezed his arm and grinned up at him. It does sound about right, though. He grinned back at her. You need to take some more, too, she told him. It still feels wrong to me, like stealing. But if you don't, I think you're going to pass right out on your feet. As soon as I can. Right now, all I want to do is get out to High Ridge. Yet once he got behind the wheel, his hand faltered away from the ignition key almost as soon as he touched it. Ralph, what is it? Nothing. Everything. I can't drive like this. I'll wrap us around a telephone pole or drive us into somebody's living room. He looked up at the sky and saw one of those huge birds, this one transparent, roosting atop a satellite dish on the roof of an apartment house across the way. A thin, lemon-colored haze drifted up from its folded prehistoric wings. Are you seeing it? A part of his mind asked doubtfully. Are you sure of that, Ralph? Are you really, really sure? I'm seeing it all right. Fortunately or unfortunately, I'm seeing it all. But if there was ever a right time to see such things, this isn't it. He concentrated and felt that interior blink happen deep within his mind. The bird faded away like a ghost image on a TV screen. The warmly glowing palette of colors spread out across the morning lost their vibrancy. He went on perceiving that other part of the world long enough to see the colors run into one another, creating the bright gray-blue haze which he'd begun seeing on the day he'd gone into daybreak sundown for coffee and pie with Joe Weiser. And then that was gone too. Ralph felt an almost crushing need to curl up, pillow his head on his arm, and go to sleep. He began taking long, slow breaths instead, pulling each one a little deeper into his lungs, and then turned the ignition key. The engine roared into life, accompanied by that clacking sound. It was much louder now. What's that? Lois asked. I don't know, Ralph said, but he thought he did. Either a tie rod or a piston. In either case, they would be in trouble if it let go. At last, the sound began to diminish, and Ralph dropped the transmission into drive. Just poke me hard if you see me starting to nod off, Lois. You can count on it, she said. Now let's go. The Dunkin' Donuts on Newport Avenue was a jolly pink sugar church in a drab neighborhood of tract houses. Most had been built in a single year, 1946, and were now crumbling. This was Derry's old Cape, where elderly cars with wired-up mufflers and cracked windshields wore bumper stickers saying things like, "Don't blame me, I voted for Perot." And all the way with the NRA, where no house was complete without at least one Fisher-Price big-wheeled trike standing on the listless lawn, where girls were stepping dynamite at 16 and all too often dull-eyed, fat-bottomed mothers of three at 24. Two boys on fluorescent bikes with extravagant ape-hanger handlebars were doing wheelies in the parking lot, weaving in and out of each other's path with a dexterity that suggested a solid background in video gaming and possible high-paying futures as air traffic controllers. If they managed to stay away from coke and car accidents, that was. Both wore their hats backward. Ralph wondered briefly why they weren't in school on a Friday morning, or at least on the way, and decided he didn't care. Probably they didn't either. Suddenly, the two bikes, which had been avoiding each other easily up until then, crashed together. Both boys fell to the pavement, then got to their feet almost immediately. Ralph was relieved to see neither was hurt. Their auras did not even flicker. "Goddamn wet end!" the one in the Nirvana T-shirt yelled indignantly at his friend. He was perhaps 11. "What the hell's the matter with you? You ride a bike like old people fuck!" "I heard something," the other said, resetting his hat carefully on his dirty blonde hair. "Great big bang! You telling me you didn't hear it? Booyah!" "I didn't hear jack shit," Nirvana boy said. He held out his palms, which were now dirty, or perhaps just dirtier, and oozing blood from two or three minor scratches. "Look at this, fucking road rash!" "You'll live," his friend said. "Yeah, but..." Nirvana boy noticed Ralph leaning against his rusty whale of an Oldsmobile with his hands in his pockets, watching them. "The fuck you looking at?" "You and your friend," Ralph said. "That's all." "That's all, huh?" "Yep, the whole story." Nirvana boy glanced at his friend, then back at Ralph. His eyes glowered with a purity of suspicion which, in Ralph's experience, could be found only here in the old Cape. "You got a problem?" "Not me," Ralph said. He had inhaled a great deal of Nirvana boy's russet-colored aura, and now felt quite a bit like Superman on a speed trip. He also felt like a child molester. "I was just thinking that we didn't talk much like you and your friend when I was a kid." Nirvana boy regarded him insolently. "Yeah? What did you talk like?" "I can't quite remember," Ralph said, "but I don't think we sounded quite so much like shitheads." He turned away from them as the screen door slammed. Lois came out of the Dunkin' Donuts with a large container of coffee in each hand. The boys, meanwhile, jumped on their fluorescent bikes and streaked off, Nirvana boy giving Ralph one final distrustful look over his shoulder. "Can you drink this and drive the car at the same time?" Lois asked, handing him a coffee. "I think so," Ralph said. "But I don't really need it anymore. I'm fine, Lois." She glanced after the two boys, then nodded. "Let's go." The world blazed all around them as they drove out Route 33 toward what had once been Barrett's Orchards, and they didn't have to slide even a single inch up the ladder of perception to see it. The city fell away, and they drove through second-growth woods on fire with autumn. The sky was a blue lane above the road, and the Oldsmobile's shadow raced beside them, wavering across leaves and branches. "God, it's so beautiful," Lois said. "Isn't it beautiful, Ralph?"
"Yes, it is."
"You know what I wish, more than anything?" He shook his head. "That we could just pull over to the side of the road, stop the car, and get out and walk into the woods a little way. Find a clearing, sit in the sun, and look up at the clouds. You'd say, 'Look at that one, Lois. It looks like a horse.' And I'd say, 'Look over there, Ralph. It's a man with a broom.' Wouldn't that be nice?"
"Yes," Ralph said.
The woods opened in a narrow aisle on their left. Power poles marched down the steep slope like soldiers. High-tension lines shone silver between them in the morning sunlight, gossamer as spider webs. The feet of the poles were buried in brazen drifts of red sumac, and when Ralph looked up above the slash, he saw a hawk riding an air current as invisible as the world of auras. "Yes," he said again, "that would be nice. Maybe we'll even get a chance to do it sometime. But what?" "Each thing I do, I rush through so I can do something else," Ralph said. She looked at him a little startled. "What a terrible idea."
"Yeah, I think most true ideas are terrible. It's from a book of poems called Cemetery Nights. Dorrance Marsteller gave it to me on the same day he slipped upstairs to my apartment and put the spray can of Bodyguard into my jacket pocket."
He glanced up into his rear-view mirror and saw at least 2 miles of Route 33 laid out behind them, a strip of black running through the fiery woods. Sunlight twinkled on chrome. A car, maybe two or three, and coming fast from the look. "Old Dorr," she mused. "Yes. You know, Lois, I think he's also a part of this."
"Maybe he is," Lois said. "And if Ed's a special case, maybe Dorrance is too."
"Yes, that thought occurred to me. The most interesting thing about him,
Old Dor, I mean, not Ed, is that I don't think Clotho and Lachesis know about him. It's like he's from an entirely different neighborhood. What do you mean? I'm not sure, but Mr. C and Mr. L never mentioned him. And that seems... He glanced back at the rear view. Now there was a fourth car, behind the others, but moving up fast. And he could see the blue flashes atop the closer three. Police cars. Headed for Newport? No, probably headed for someplace a little closer than that. Maybe they're after us, Ralph thought. Maybe Lois's suggestion that the Richards woman forget we were there didn't hold. But would the police send four cruisers after two golden ages in a rust-bucket Oldsmobile? Ralph didn't think so. Helen's face suddenly flashed into his mind. He felt a sinking in the pit of his stomach as he guided the Olds over to the side of the road. Ralph, what? Then she heard the rising howl of the sirens and turned in her seat, alarm widening her eyes. The first three police cars roared past at better than 80 miles an hour, pelting Ralph's car with grit and sending crisp fallen leaves into dancing dervishes in their wake. Ralph, she nearly screamed. What if it's High Ridge? Helen's out there. Helen and her baby. I know, Ralph said. And as the fourth police car slammed by them hard enough to rock the Oldsmobile on its springs, he felt that interior blink happen again. He reached for the transmission lever, and then his hand stopped in midair, still 3 inches from it. His eyes were fixed upon the horizon. The smudge there was less spectral than the obscene black umbrella they had seen hanging over the Civic Center. But Ralph knew it was the same thing. A death bag. Faster! Lois shouted at him. Go faster, Ralph! I can't! He said. His teeth were clamped together and the words came out sounding squeezed. I've got it matted. Also, he did not add, this is the fastest I've gone in 35 years and I'm scared to death. The needle quivered a hair's breadth beyond the 80 mark on the speedometer. The woods slid by in a blurred mix of reds and yellows and magentas. Under the hood, the engine was no longer just clacking, but hammering like a platoon of blacksmiths on a binge. In spite of this, the fresh trio of police cars Ralph saw in his mirror were catching up easily. The road curved sharply right up ahead. Denying every instinct, Ralph kept his foot away from the brake pedal. He did take it off the gas as they went into the curve, then mashed it back to the mat again as he felt the rear end trying to break loose on the back side. He was hunched over the wheel now, upper teeth clamped tightly on his lower lip, eyes wide open and bulging beneath the salt-and-pepper tangle of his eyebrows. The sedan's rear tires howled, and Lois fell into him, scrabbling at the back of her seat for purchase. Ralph clung to the wheel with sweaty fingers and waited for the car to flip. The Olds was one of the last true Detroit road monsters, however, wide and heavy and low. It outlasted the curve, and on the far side Ralph saw a red farmhouse on the left. There were two barns behind it. Ralph, there's the turn. I see. The new batch of police cars had caught up with them and were swinging out to pass. Ralph got as far over as he could, praying that none of them would rear-end him at this speed. None did. They zipped by in close bumper-to-bumper formation, swung left, and started up the long hill which led to High Ridge. Hang on, Lois. Oh, I am, she said. The old slid almost sideways as Ralph made the left onto what he and Carolyn had always called the Orchard Road. If the narrow country lane had been tarred, the big car probably would have rolled over like a stunt vehicle in a thrill show. It wasn't, however, and instead of going door over roof, the olds just skidded extravagantly, sending up dry billows of dust. Lois gave a thin, out-of-breath shriek, and Ralph snatched a quick look at her. Go on! She flapped an impatient hand at the road ahead, and in that moment she looked so eerily like Carolyn that Ralph almost felt he was seeing a ghost. He wondered what Carol, who had nearly made a career out of telling him to go faster during the last 5 years of her life, would have made of this little spin in the country. Never mind me, just watch the road. More police cars were making the turn onto Orchard Road now. How many was that in all? Ralph didn't know. He'd lost count. Maybe a dozen in all. He steered the Oldsmobile over until the right two wheels were running on the edge of a nasty-looking ditch, and the reinforcements, three with Derry Police printed in gold on the sides, and two state police cruisers, blew past, throwing up fresh showers of dirt and gravel. For just a moment, Ralph saw a uniformed policeman leaning out of one of the Derry police cars, waving at him, and then the Olds was buried in a yellow cloud of dust. Ralph smothered a new and even stronger urge to climb on the brake by thinking of Helen and Nat. A moment later he could see again, sort of anyway. The newest batch of police cars was already halfway up the hill. "That cop was waving you off, wasn't he?" Lois asked.
"You bet."
"They're not even going to let us get close." She was looking at the black smudge on top of the hill with wide, dismayed eyes. "We'll get as close as we need to." Ralph checked the rear view for more traffic and saw nothing but hanging road dust. "Ralph?"
"What?"
"Are you up? Do you see the colors?" He took a quick look at her. She still looked beautiful to him and marvelously young, but there was no sign of her aura.
"No," he said. "Do you?"
"I don't know. I still see that." She pointed through the windshield at the dark smudge on top of the hill. "What is it? If it's not a death bag, what is it?" He opened his mouth to tell her it was smoke, and there was only one thing up there likely to be on fire. But before he could get out a single word, there was a tremendous hot bang from the Oldsmobile's engine compartment. The hood jumped and even dimpled in one place, as if an angry fist had lashed up inside. The car took a single forward snap jerk that felt like a hiccup. The red idiot lights came on, and the engine quit. He steered the Olds toward the soft shoulder, and when the edge gave way beneath the right side wheels, and the car cantered into the ditch, Ralph had a strong, clear premonition that he had just completed his last tour of duty as a motor vehicle operator. This idea was accompanied by absolutely no regret at all.
"What happened?" Lois nearly screamed.
"We blew a rod," he said. "Looks like it's Shank's pony the rest of the way up the hill, Lois. Come on out on my side so you don't squelch in the mud." There was a brisk westerly breeze, and once they were out of the car, the smell of smoke from the top of the hill was very strong. They started the last quarter mile without talking about it, walking hand in hand and walking fast. By the time they saw the state police cruiser slewed sideways across the top of the road, the smoke was rising in billows above the trees, and Lois was gasping for breath.
"Lois, are you all right?"
"I'm fine," she gasped. "I just weigh two..."
Crack, crack, crack.
Pistol shots from beyond the car blocking the road. They were followed by a hoarse, rapid coughing sound Ralph could easily identify from TV news stories about civil wars in third world countries and drive-by shootings in third world American cities. An automatic weapon set to rapid fire. There were more pistol shots, then the louder, rougher report of a shotgun. This was followed by a shriek of pain that made Ralph wince and want to cover his ears. He thought it was a woman's scream, and he suddenly remembered something which had been eluding him. The last name of the woman John Lydecker had mentioned. McKay it had been. Sandra McKay. That thought coming at this time filled him with unreasoning horror. He tried to tell himself that the screamer could have been anyone, even a man. Sometimes men sounded like women when they had been hurt, but he knew better. It was her. It was them. Ed's crazies. They had mounted an assault on High Ridge. More sirens from behind them. The smell of the smoke thicker now. Lois looking at him with dismayed, frightened eyes and still gasping for breath. Ralph glanced up the hill and saw a silver RFD box standing at the side of the road. There was no name on it, of course. The women who ran High Ridge had done their best to keep a low profile and maintain their anonymity. Much good it had done them today. The mailbox's flag was up. Somebody had a letter for the postman. That made Ralph think of the letter Helen had sent him from High Ridge. A cautious letter, but full of hope nevertheless. More gunfire. The whine of a ricochet, breaking glass, a bellow that might have been anger but was probably pain. the hungry crackle of hot flames gobbling dry wood, warbling sirens, and Lois's dark Spanish eyes fixed on him because he was the man, and she'd been raised to believe that men knew what to do in situations like this. "Then do something," he yelled at himself. "For Christ's sweet sake, do something!" But what? What?
"Pickering!"
A bullhorn-amplified voice bellowed from beyond the place where the road curved into a grove of young Christmas tree-sized spruces. Ralph could now see red sparks and licks of orange flame in the thickening smoke rising above the firs.
"Pickering! There are women in there! Let us save the women!"
"He knows there are women," Lois murmured. "Don't they understand that he knows that? Are they fools, Ralph?" A strange, wavering shriek answered the cop with a bullhorn, and it took Ralph a second or two to realize that this response was a species of laughter. There was another chattering burst of automatic fire. It was returned by a barrage of pistol shots and shotgun blasts. Lois squeezed his hand with chilly fingers. "What do we do, Ralph? What do we do now?" He looked at the billowing gray-black smoke rising over the trees, then back down toward the police cars racing up the hill, over half a dozen of them this time, and finally back to Lois's pale, strained face. His mind had cleared a little, not much, but enough for him to realize there was really just one answer to her question. "We go up," he said. Blink, and the flames shooting over the grove of spruces went from orange to green. The hungry crackling sound became muffled, like the sound of firecrackers going off inside a closed box. Still holding Lois's hand, Ralph led her around the front bumper of the state police car, which had been left as a roadblock. The newly arrived police cars were pulling up behind the roadblock. Men in blue uniforms came spilling out of them almost before they had stopped. Several were carrying riot guns, and most were wearing puffy black vests. One of them sprinted through Ralph like a gust of warm wind before he could dodge aside. A young man named David Wilbert, who thought his wife might be having an affair with her boss at the real estate office where she worked as a secretary. The question of his wife had taken a back seat, at least temporarily, to David Wilbert's almost overpowering need to pee, however, and to the constant frightened chant that wove through his thoughts like a snake. "You won't disgrace yourself. You won't disgrace yourself. You won't. You won't. You won't."
"Pickering!"
the amplified voice bellowed, and Ralph found he could actually taste the words in his mouth, like small silver pellets.
"Your friends are dead, Pickering. Throw down your weapon and step out into the yard. Let us save the women."
Ralph and Lois rounded the corner, unseen by the men running all around them, and came to a tangle of police cars parked at the place where the road became a driveway lined on both sides by pretty planter boxes filled with bright flowers. The woman's touch that means so much, Ralph thought. The driveway opened into the dooryard of a rambling white farmhouse, at least 70 years old. It was three stories high, with two wings and a long porch which ran the length of the building, and commanded a fabulous view toward the west, where dim blue mountains rose in the mid-morning light. This house, with its peaceful view, had once housed the Barrett family and their apple business, and had more recently housed dozens of battered, frightened women. But one look was enough to tell Ralph that it would house no one at all come this time tomorrow morning. The south wing was in flames, and that side of the porch was catching. Tongues of fire poked out the windows and licked lasciviously along the eaves, sending shingles floating upward in fiery scraps. He saw a wicker rocking chair burning at the far end of the porch. A half-knitted scarf lay over one of the rocker's arms. The needles dangling from it glowed white-hot. Somewhere a wind chime was tinkling a mad, repetitive melody. A dead woman in green fatigues and a flak jacket sprawled head down on the porch steps, glaring at the sky through the blood-smeared lenses of her glasses. There was dirt in her hair, a pistol in her hand, and a ragged black hole in her midsection. A man lay draped over the railing at the north end of the porch, with one booted foot propped on the lawn glider. He was also wearing fatigues and a flak jacket. An assault rifle with a banana clip sticking out of it lay in a flower bed below him. Blood ran down his fingers and dripped from his nails. To Ralph's heightened eye, the drops looked black and dead. Felton, he thought. If the police are still yelling at Charlie Pickering, if Pickering's inside, then that must be Frank Felton. And what about Susan Day? Ed's down the coast somewhere. Lois seems sure of that, and I think she's right. But what if Susan Day's in there? Jesus, is that possible? He supposed it was, but the possibilities didn't matter. Not now. Helen and Natalie were almost certainly in there, along with God knew how many other helpless, terrorized women. And that did matter. There was the sound of breaking glass from inside the house, followed by a soft explosion, almost a gasp. Ralph saw new flames jump up behind the panes of the front door. Molotov cocktails, he thought. Charlie Pickering finally got a chance to throw a few. How wonderful for him. Ralph didn't know how many cops were crouched behind the cars parked at the head of the driveway. It looked like at least 30. But he picked out the two who had busted Ed Deepnow at once. Chris Nell was crouched behind the front tire of the Derry police car closest to the house, and John Lydecker was down on one knee beside him. Nell was the one with the bullhorn, and as Ralph and Lois approached the police strong point, he glanced at Lydecker. Lydecker nodded, pointed at the house, then pushed his palms at Nell in a gesture Ralph read easily. Be careful. He read something more distressing in Chris Nell's aura. The younger man was too excited to be careful, too stoked. And at that instant, almost as if Ralph's thought had caused it to happen, Nell's aura began changing color. It cycled from pale blue to dark gray to dead black with gruesome speed.
Give it up, Pickering!
Nell shouted, unaware that he was a dead man breathing. The wire stock of an assault rifle smashed through the glass of a window on the lower floor of the north wing, then disappeared back inside. At the same instant, the fan light over the front door exploded, showering the porch with glass. Flames roared out through the hole. A second later, the door itself shuddered open, as if nudged by an invisible hand. Nell leaned out farther, perhaps believing the shooter had finally seen reason and intended to give himself up. Ralph screaming,
"Pull him back, Johnny! Pull him back!"
The rifle emerged again, barrel first this time. Lydecker reached for Nell's collar, but he was too slow. The automatic rifle hacked its series of rapid dry coughs, and Ralph heard the metallic bank, bank, bank of bullets poking holes in the thin steel of the police car. Chris Nell's aura was totally black now. It had become a death bag. He jerked sideways as a bullet caught him in the neck, breaking Lydecker's grip on his collar and sprawling into the dooryard with one foot kicking spasmodically. The bullhorn spilled from his hand with a brief squawk of feedback. A policeman behind one of the other cars cried out in surprise and horror. Lois's shriek was much louder. More bullets stitched across the ground toward Nell and then slapped small black holes into the thighs of his blue uniform. Ralph could dimly see the man inside the death bag which was suffocating him. He was making blind efforts to roll over and get up. There was something singularly horrible about his struggles. To Ralph, it was like watching a creature caught in a net drown in shallow, filthy water. Lydecker lunged out from behind the police car, and as his fingers disappeared into the black membrane surrounding Chris Nell, Ralph heard old Dorr say,
"I wouldn't touch him any more if I were you, Ralph. I can't see your hands."
Lois,
"Don't! Don't! He's dead! He's already dead!"
The gun poking out of the window had started to move to the right. Now it swiveled unhurriedly back toward Lydecker. The man behind it, undeterred and apparently unhurt by the hail of bullets directed at him from the other police. Ralph raised his right hand and brought it down in the karate chop gesture again. But this time, instead of a wedge of light, his fingertips produced something that looked like a large blue teardrop. It spread across Lydecker's lemon-colored aura, just as the rifle sticking out of the window opened fire. Ralph saw two slugs strike the tree just to Lydecker's right, sending chips of bark flying into the air and making black holes in the fur's yellowish-white undersurface. A third struck the blue covering which had coated Lydecker's aura. Ralph saw a momentary flicker of dark red just to the left of the detective's temple and heard a low whine as the bullet either ricocheted or skipped the way a flat stone will skip across the surface of a pond. Lydecker pulled Nell back behind the car, looked at him, then tore open the driver's side door and threw himself into the front seat. Ralph could no longer see him, but could hear him screaming at someone over the radio, asking where the fuck the rescue vehicles were. More shattering glass, and Lois was grabbing frantically at Ralph's arm, pointing at something, at a brick tumbling end over end into the dooryard. It had come through one of the low, narrow windows at the base of the north wing. These windows were almost obscured by the flower beds which edged the house.
"Help us!"
A voice screamed through the broken window, even as the man with the assault rifle fired reflexively at the tumbling brick, sending up puffs of reddish dust and then breaking it into three jagged chunks. Neither Ralph nor Lois had ever heard that voice raised in a scream, but both recognized it at once, nevertheless. It was Helen Deepnose's voice.
"Help us, please! We're in the cellar! We have children! Please don't let us burn to death! We have children!"
Ralph and Lois exchanged a single wide-eyed glance, then ran for the house. Two uniformed figures, looking more like pro football linemen than cops, in their bulky Kevlar vests, charged from behind one of the cruisers, running flat out for the porch with their riot guns held at port arms. As they crossed the dooryard on a diagonal, Charlie Pickering leaned out of his window, still laughing wildly, his gray hair zanier than ever. The volume of fire directed at him was enormous, showering him with splinters from the sides of the window and actually knocking down the rusty gutter above his head. It struck the porch with a hollow bonk, but not a single bullet touched him. "How can they not be hitting him?" Ralph thought, as he and Lois mounted the porch toward the lime-colored flames, which were now billowing through the open front door. "Christ Jesus, it's almost point-blank range. How can they possibly not be hitting him?" But he knew how, and why. Clotho had told them that both Atropos and Ed Deepnose had been surrounded by forces which were malignant yet protective. Was it not likely that those same forces were now taking care of Charlie Pickering, much as Ralph himself had taken care of Lydecker when he'd left the protection of the police car to drag his dying colleague back to cover? Pickering opened up on the charging state troopers. His weapon switched to rapid fire. He aimed low to negate the value of the vests they were wearing and swept their legs out from under them. One of them fell in a silent heap. The other crawled back the way he had come, shrieking that he was hit. Oh, fuck, he was hit bad.
"Barbecue!"
Pickering cried out the window in his screaming, laughing voice.
"Barbecue! Barbecue! Holy cookout! Burn the bitches! God's fire! God's holy fire!"
There were more screams now, seemingly from right under Ralph's feet, and when he looked down, he saw a terrible thing. A medley of auras was seeping up from between the porch boards like steam, the variety of their colors muted by the scarlet blood glow which was rising with them and surrounding them. This blood-red shape wasn't quite the same as the thunderhead which had formed above the fight between Green Boy and Orange Boy outside the Red Apple, but Ralph thought it was closely related. The only difference was that this one had been born of fear instead of anger and aggression.
"Barbecue!"
Charlie Pickering was screaming, and then something about killing the devil cunts. Suddenly, Ralph hated him more than he had ever hated anyone in his life. "Come on, Lois. Let's go get that asshole." He took her by the hand and pulled her into the burning house.